Hey everyone, welcome to the Dead Name Mac podcast, a show that dives into the lives and minds of regular parents just like you and me to share why parenthood is both the most challenging and the most rewarding experience you can have in life. We'll discuss the complexities of the issues and challenges we all face along our journeys as humans and gain a deeper understanding of the personal transformations we go through along the way. Maybe you're someone who's on the fence about having kids, or maybe you know you want them and are struggling to determine if you're ready, or maybe you already have them and you are feeling like you've hit a wall of uncertainty in your life. This podcast is for you. I'm your host, Mac, and I'm a millennial dad in my 30s who is constantly seeking new ways to improve and optimize the parent experience to find the right balance between parental responsibilities and self-fulfillment. I hope you'll join me on this journey to better understand the importance of parenthood and how we can make a difference and a positive impact on the world as parents. Hey everyone, Dad Named Mac here. Welcome back to the Dad Named Mac podcast. Previously, we started discussing the children's game of Jenga and how it is an incredible metaphor for many of life's most important lessons. I explained how the game, just like in life, we are faced with constant choices and how we must focus our time and energy on the choices we have control over and our reactions to the choices of others for which we do not have control. These two concepts of choice and control will be reiterated throughout the series as they apply in all aspects of our lives, sometimes more obviously than in other times. If you missed my part one episode, I highly recommend watching it on YouTube or listening to it on your favorite podcasting platform. The information provided, while somewhat rudimentary, will be important to understand as we continue to move through the series. Now, in today's episode, we are going to go a level deeper into Jenga and why I believe it is the true game of life. I'll explain how I went about developing this entire construct, provide an overview of the four key areas of life as I see them, and discuss how they come together, and hopefully leave you with an understanding of how you will be able to use the structure of Jenga to teach your kids these same lessons after you learn them through the series. Now, I wanted to jump in right away today as I'm just so excited to share my thoughts today with you new parents, old parents, grandparents, prospective parents. About a month or so ago, I went and bought not one, but two sets of the game of Jenga, and actually took the time to hand paint one of the sets of blocks with my wife and daughter, as you can see here. Now, why did I do this? Obviously, because I like getting my hands dirty. But really, I wanted to understand this idea, this structure of life for myself first, and being able to play around with the game physically and tangibly allowed me to better visualize all the concepts and make sure what I was thinking in my head would make sense logically with the physical blocks. And that was extremely important to me before I started creating this series because I wanted to be sure that this was going to be the right tool, that it was the right model to use for sharing and teaching others, including our kids. I wanted this to be something that others could easily replicate. Now that I've had the time to really think through and better understand the game for myself, I am confident that Jenga will be the life-changing educational model I hoped it could be. Now, rewinding just a little bit, before I did anything with the game itself, I started off by just writing down all the thoughts, concepts, and ideas I had been having on paper. As you'll see, the ideas were all over the place. They were scattered, and I was having trouble organizing them. In the process of trying to understand how some of these concepts tie together, I started sketching various models and diagrams, trying to create relationships or flowcharts that made sense. And at one point, I recalled Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I felt I needed to dig deeper into the structure developed by an actual world-renowned psychologist before trying to develop one for myself. Maslow's hierarchy is one of the most well-known theories about the various areas or levels of human needs as understood through the field of psychology and is often represented in the form of a pyramid, although Maslow never included the pyramid visual in his original work, which was actually a paper called A Theory of Human Motivation. It was published in 1943, which, interestingly enough, was in the middle of World War II, a time of high stress and high anxiety levels all around the world. Time when just about every adult on the planet was hyper-focused on the two lowest levels of Maslow's hierarchy, physiological needs and safety. Now, physiological needs include anything necessary for our animalistic survival, such as air, water, food, shelter, sleep. And safety needs include physical safety from war or natural disasters, but also economic stability, such as steady income or job security. The following levels of the hierarchy include belonging and love, esteem, cognitive needs, aesthetic needs, self-actualization, and transcendence. The pyramid graphic was developed to hit home the idea that the higher levels necessitate a level of stability at the lower levels, and as you move up the pyramid, there are more and more areas of need that must be satisfied, making it much more difficult to attain those higher levels. Maslow's theory suggests the second highest level, self-actualization, should be the goal for us as humans to seek to reach. According to Wikipedia, a self-actualizer is a person who is living creatively and fully using his or her potentials. It refers to the desire for self-fulfillment, namely to the tendency for a person to become actualized in what they are potentially. Now, rephrasing that slightly, self-actualization is the highest level of psychological development where personal potential is fully realized after basic bodily and ego needs have been fulfilled. Bodily needs such as physiological and safety are simple. Ego needs, however, are more complicated. These include the levels of belonging and love through aesthetic needs. And so to reach a level of self-actualization, to reach the goal as implied by Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have to push ourselves to overcome our egos. But as these needs are more complex, they are therefore more difficult to fully satisfy. They're so difficult that 98 to 99% of humans never do so. Just about every source available online will tell you that only 1 to 2% of people actually make it. It's quite a staggering statistic, but when you look at how modern society has been developed, it's really not all that surprising. It's somewhat upsetting, but not overly surprising. According to GoodTherapy.com, characteristics of someone who's becoming or become self-actualized include finding humor in a given situation, getting enjoyment and satisfaction out of the present moment, understanding what they need in order to gain a sense of fulfillment, and having a tendency to feel secure and unashamed in who they are. These probably sound fairly straightforward to you and a lot like the cliches we all hear preached all the time. Enjoy the present and be in the moment. Live like there's no tomorrow. Dance like no one is watching. But most people get stuck in the plethora of traps at the lower levels. They get stuck chasing a level of financial wealth or status, chasing the perfect partner, the one who we are destined to be with, chasing extreme levels of external affirmation, respect from our friends or peers, likes on social media, admiration from our subscribers or followers. We get stuck in these hamster wheels, running in circles endlessly, chasing something that we can never seem to get, something that never comes. And eventually we end up feeling tired, exhausted, burnt out, depressed, lonely. We feel like there's no end. We feel like we're stuck in a perpetual loop. Perpetual. There's that word again. I mentioned in my previous episode that Jenga was originally called Jenga the Perpetual Challenge, but the name was truncated to simply Jenga before becoming the popular game it is today. When we feel like there is no end, we can feel trapped. We get scared and anxious. We can feel like we have no direction or no purpose. And these negative emotions we feel and negative thoughts we start thinking can lead to depression, to mental health issues. But if we can escape the hamster wheel traps, if we can remove ourselves from the game and recognize them for what they are, we can begin to understand and see the bigger picture. I came out of my research foray into Maslow's hierarchy of needs with a much better understanding of his theory, but also a handful of questions. And these questions guided me towards my own theory that differs from Maslow's in two main ways. First, I questioned the idea that all these needs must be met in a somewhat linear progression. As a completely average guy growing up with the belief that life followed a single direction track towards success, that idea of linear progression used to make sense to me, all the way up until my recent midlife crisis experience where my one-track life train just flew off the tracks into the Grand Canyon and exploded in a fiery ball of death. I realized I was wrong and had been my entire life to that point, which, while extremely frustrating and disheartening initially, was actually one of the best revelations I've ever had. It was truly life-changing in the most literal sense. In the pyramid version of Maslow's hierarchy, to reach the next level up, he suggests you must achieve a certain level of satisfaction, of fulfillment at the prior lower level before you can proceed upwards. But this aspect of the theory can be disproved in a multitude of ways. For example, you don't need to be financially stable to engage in or maintain a romantic relationship. Just look at how many people in today's world are in relationships or even marriages with partners who have little to no understanding of personal finances. The relationships can still work. Or, for example, from a wider gap in the pyramid, people will spend tons of money or take on debt even to go on vacations to destinations to achieve a level of aesthetic satisfaction which relates to one's desire to connect with nature and acknowledge the beauty of the world that surrounds us. It can be a reach, but people who truly value travel can sometimes accept financial risk and ruin for an opportunity to see the world. The second question I had of Maslow's hierarchy was regarding the number of levels. As a guy who prefers the keep it simple stupid or the KISS method, I felt having 7 different levels to satisfy in a single lifetime to achieve a semblance of humanly fulfillment seemed like overkill. The average lifespan, according to the CDC, across both men and women in the United States as of this recording in 2024, is 77 and a half years. If you're telling me we have to one by one, step by step, achieve a solid level of total fulfillment in 7 different areas of life, and we only have 77 and a half years to do it, you gotta be kidding me. As humans, from ages 0 to 2, we're entirely dependent on our parents for survival, and that reliance really goes on much further for most, sometimes until the early teens. And furthermore, from a safety standpoint, if referring to economic stability, most of us don't achieve that level until we are into our late teens through early 20s, or in today's economy, some aren't even getting there until their 30s are almost over. In that sense, if we are unable to get past levels 1 and 2 until nearly half our lives are over, achieving levels 3 through 7 or 8 seems nearly impossible. In my mind, this can be simplified significantly from 7 or 8 levels to just 4. And that's where we will now come back to my beautiful hand-painted set of Jenga. As you'll see if you're watching the video version of this episode, I have divided up the blocks into 4 piles. There are 54 total in a Jenga set, which, when set up in the tower for the game, creates 18 levels, each with 3 blocks in it. We cannot divide 54 into 4 equal piles, which initially presented me with an issue. However, as I thought more about the numbers, I realized this was actually more perfect because each pile could consist of a different number of blocks. In my mind and structure, these 4 piles represent the 4 key areas of life: finances, relationships, self-fulfillment, and self-actualization. And I chose these because I believe they are most relevant to modern society and life, and because I think they encompass the other areas of Maslow's hierarchy in ways that don't necessitate having additional levels. Let me explain. I believe finances, aka money or equivalent currency, is important. I'll go as far as to say essential to modern day life, as I truly believe that's the case. We've all heard the saying, money can't buy happiness, but I can assure you it helps. And in today's world, money is used to satisfy both your physiological needs as well as your safety needs. Food, clothes, shelter, or your home, your job, your health, as far as medical coverage, all require a level of financial stability for you to feel comfortable in your life as an adult. The area of relationships encompasses the levels of belonging and love, and partially of esteem, in the sense that part of your esteem relies on your relationship with yourself, as well as your relationships with others. The other part of esteem, which relates to self-confidence and competence, can be combined with the levels of cognitive and aesthetic needs in my self-fulfillment area. As we attempt to seek a higher understanding of our humanness, of the world and things beyond, we often find we have a lot to discover within ourselves first. We sometimes have to take a step back to find out who we are, what our beliefs are, what our true values are, before we can push forward. And when we do, we can actually start to consciously approach the area of self-actualization, which I believe encapsulates the concepts of transcendence and spirituality. I'll discuss my beliefs later in the series, but in my experience, the two go hand in hand. Now, returning to our 4 piles of blocks, I realize each could consist of a different number of blocks. And in my mind, similar to Maslow's hierarchy, some of these areas hold more weight in our minds due to our conditioning. Finances, which revolve around money, are an extremely tangible part of our lives, and so they are naturally a heavy focus for us. Money is all around us. I allocated 6 levels or 18 blocks to finances and colored them green. Relationships are critical to us as humans. We desire a sense of belonging and crave emotional connections to know that we are loved and that we are real. These are also extremely prevalent and frequently focused on in our lives, so I allocated 5 levels or 15 blocks to relationships and painted them red. Self-fulfillment is an area that is discussed slightly less, but certainly something most adults eventually reach a level of desire to pursue. Some people embark on this journey at early ages in young adulthood, while others, they can get into their 40s or 50s before they realize how to focus on this area. Now, I allocated 4 levels or 12 blocks here and made them yellow. And finally, as self-actualization is the most difficult level to achieve, I allocated 3 levels or 9 blocks to this area and have colored them blue. Now, I could have more heavily weighted the lower levels and reduced self-actualization to just a single level, but I feel this is more achievable than that. I think this level of understanding isn't reserved only for those in their 50s, 60s, and beyond who have millions of dollars, kids, possibly grandkids, and who have had time in retirement to reflect, look back, and ponder their lives freely. I truly believe we can all reach this level and do so in our early 40s, in our 30s, even our early 30s, and possibly even in our late 20s. And so I wanted the distribution to feel more balanced, more attainable just for the average Joe like me. But we have to do what we can to find ways to learn faster, to teach faster and more clearly. We can grow that 1% to 2% to 5% to 10% to 25% by learning ourselves, educating our children, and teaching them in a way so they can teach their children and beyond. In today's world, we've been conditioned to shy away from these higher levels. We've been blinded and distracted from seeing them as important. We've been taught to believe it's not necessary to achieve levels of self-fulfillment or self-actualization to have a good life. A good life in terms of what somebody externally tells us they view as good, meaning you were able to be successful on the standard track of life. You were able to get a good education. You were able to get a good job, engage in a good relationship or marriage, possibly have kids or grandkids. But when we're lying on our deathbeds thinking about our lives, what are our deepest regrets? focusing too much on our day jobs, not expressing our feelings, losing touch with our friends or family, not living a life for ourselves, a life true to ourselves. We regret living a life that was expected of us, one that was built on the approval of others rather than one that we believed in, one we knew was lived to the fullest extent without regard for other people's opinions, criticisms, or validation. Now that we have established our multicolored multi-phase tower, we can begin playing the game. When looking at the tower from afar, there appears to be a linear structure just like the ones we've been trying to depart from. But as you begin to play, as you begin to remove blocks from the lower levels and place them in new levels, you'll start to see changes. The lower levels start fading, while the new levels are created in multiple colors, with newly created strength and stability allowing for further growth. This process of playing, in my mind, represents how we evolve from children into adults. Our first round begins with a single-track mind, a path we must follow. But as we learn and grow and begin to understand different aspects of our lives, we become stronger. We start to think differently about things and have new opinions. We find new beliefs and motivations, new goals, new heights. But as we do this, our old layers, our old systems and beliefs begin to fade. They begin to shift and weaken. We remove pieces of ourselves, the weaker, loose ones that aren't necessary in our lives at that present moment time, and find new opportunities. But eventually, we hit a point of inflection, a period of instability that can cause us to feel fear and anxiety. We almost anticipate what's coming, but we're forced to play on until fate becomes reality. Crash. Our tower collapses. We hit this wall of uncertainty in our lives that causes our structures to fail. It can seem devastating. It can hurt. We can be left feeling in pain and without purpose or direction as to where to go next. A midlife crisis. But when we find ourselves in the rubble of a collapse, we can change our perspective. We need to see the blocks differently. We need to understand that in failure, we're presented with new opportunity. Opportunity to rebuild and reshape and do so with more knowledge and understanding than before. We can build better. We can build stronger. As we reconstruct the tower to begin a new round, notice the 54 blocks are the same, but they're placed in different orders. The individual blocks may be placed in a different orientation with a different side facing up or down. We discussed the reasoning behind the colors and numbers I chose for the game, but we didn't discuss the individual blocks. With each layer having three blocks, there are three different locations a block can be placed in any given layer. Two ends and a middle. I mentioned in the previous episode, but because of the odd number of blocks in a layer, there are a finite number of arrangements that can be placed and still support the tower. All three blocks, two ends, either end in the middle, or just the middle alone. For this series, I want to call any block that is necessary for a single level of support a cornerstone. It's a block that must remain to keep the tower from collapsing. For example, if you are left with the two end blocks, both are cornerstones. If you pulled either one out, the tower would fall. A block has six sides. In Jenga, they can be placed with a certain side up or down. Two options. As each color represents a different area of our lives, I view each individual block in two ways simultaneously. First, each block represents a period of time. It could be a split-second occurrence. It could be a special day in your life. It could be a year, a decade. There are a finite number of blocks as there is a finite amount of time in our lives. And the time we put into certain aspects of our lives should be observed and managed with care, just as the blocks are in the game. And second, each block represents a specific event, person, or aspect of our lives. A finance block could represent your emergency fund. A relationship block could represent your spouse. A self-fulfillment block could represent one of your personal values. And examples like these could be your cornerstones, your critical blocks that your tower and its current state depend on. Your cornerstones are the foundational blocks that support you, keep you secure in moments of instability, and provide you with the freedom and courage to take risks. And with each block having two playable sides, I see each as providing an opportunity for a conversion, a transformation throughout the game. For clarity, let's just say we call one side side A and one side side B. At any given point, side A can be up while B is down, and another point, A can be down while B is up. I've labeled most of these blocks on both sides as examples from my life, but some of these may apply to yours as well. You can choose what to put on them, but they should represent something important to you. And what I mean by an opportunity for a conversion is a chance for something in your life at one point to become something else. I'll explain more examples throughout the series, but take, for instance, a finance block. One side may say savings account, while the other says a college experience. You may have saved some money at one point in your life as a teenager that you spent on tickets to the Final Four. The money you were saving at one point to support your ramen noodle lifestyle provided you with a once-in-a-lifetime experience that allowed you to find gratitude as a fan watching your team's championship season run. And it's these types of experiences that can shape your values. You can appreciate the limited opportunity, the limited time that presents itself in those types of seasons, and can find yourself saving again in the future to be able to afford to take or send your children one day. Now, that's a very basic example, and I'm excited to share more as we go deeper into each of these areas of life in the following episodes. But for now, I want to leave you thinking about the structure I've created. I want you to visualize, perhaps, buy a set of the game yourself and see if you agree with the concept and principle. I think this applies as much to any individual's life as it does for their kids' lives, and it also represents how we should approach life together. When we play the game of Jenga with others, we are working towards a common goal to build and avoid a collective failure. When we approach these phases of our lives as a team, we can build a tower made from blocks forged from everyone's lives and experiences. As parents, we use our knowledge and experience to help shape our children's lives. But when we bring in others like grandparents, relatives, friends, mentors into the game, we can make their tower stronger. It takes a village to raise a child. It's such a true statement. We have to be selective about who we let into their lives, but as parents, we can't do it all alone. And as each generation works together to build a better future, the game of Jenga can represent how we reshape our society for future generations. Each collapse is the end of a generation's beliefs and values that were based on their specific experience and time. But we can begin shaping the world, shaping society for the future today. We can play a part and add our block to the tower. And the question then becomes, what do we want our block to represent? What cornerstone will we be remembered for? When we can remove ourselves from the busyness of life, remove ourselves from the game itself, we can start to see the bigger picture. We can start to see the goals we should be striving to reach. And when we do this, we can start living with new intent and purpose. We can start living in a way that allows us to be strategic, to be thoughtful. We start living in the moment. We start living for real. This has been Jenga, The True Game of Life, Part 2 on the Dad Named Mac podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating the podcast, sharing this message with others, following our channel on YouTube, and doing what you can to spread these messages, ideas, and thoughts. I hope you continue to follow along in the series as we dive deeper into each of these four key areas of life. I'll go into real-life examples and describe how each of these individual areas can be constructed together and developed to build stronger towers for yourself, for your kids, for their kids, and for others. As always, thanks for watching, and thanks for listening.